This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to read a good book. Well, I'm going to start this hour off with a birthday song, because it is the birthday of a very important author, an inspirational author, and someone I want to talk about. So we'll start with a birthday song for her in a moment, and then we will be able to talk about, you know, I love authors who are inspirational to other authors. Nowadays, you know, there are so many of you out there, you're starting to write, you've been writing, and sometimes you even think about giving up on writing. But I want to make sure that you understand that an author, when you are an author and you have found the joy on paper, you want to keep writing. So here's a birthday song for our girl. Today is the birthday of JoJo Moyes. Now, all of you out there have heard about her. You've seen her books that were turned into films. And she is a fantastic author and also a great inspiration. She is one of the few authors who twice won the Romantic Novel of the Year Award. And her books have been translated into 28 languages. She was one of my very first guests, and I am so happy to be able, I want to play my interview with her because I was just starting off then. I think it's a great interview because I just fell in love with her books and with her because she is so sweet and so inspirational. When I come back after you listen to this interview, I will tell you why she is an inspiration to all of you. So this is JoJo Moyes. I was just telling everyone about you. What can I say? You are amazing. There are not many people who have been 65 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list.
That was pretty amazing, I have to say.
It's like a
dream come true. It was kind of incredible.
It is incredible. And then at a certain point, you had three of your books on the best-selling list.
Yeah, you better stop because I think people are just going to not like me anymore.
No. Well, it's a well-deserved success. I know that you sold at least 5 million of Me Before You, which is a nice title. You sold 5 million of those. So the new book it after is. You.
So really, the book picks up 18 months after the end of Me Before You. And it was a book I hadn't planned to write, but something kind of strange happened with Me Before You, which is, unlike the books I wrote before that one, I just had this endless stream of emails and messages from people who wanted to talk about Louisa Clark, the main character. And I don't know if it was because they saw themselves in her or because it reflected something that was going on in their own lives. But it meant that whereas mostly your characters leave you once you finished a book, Louisa never did. And so finally, after kind of a couple of years of responding to these reader emails, I allowed myself to ask the question that they were asking me, which was, well, what would happen to her next? And once I had an answer, I just felt I had to write the book.
You know, it's always hard to do a sequel. It's not a easy thing because you have to maintain the integrity of your characters, and you have done that.
That's exactly it. I hope you think so.
Yes.
I thought it was going to be easy. I'm going to admit that. I thought that because I knew the character so well and I had this plot mapped out in my head, I thought, well, this is going to be great because my biggest problem is usually creating the characters. That's the thing that I really put the most work into, just to try and make people who are kind of complex and a bit original and interesting. And what happened was I started writing, and then I just kept hearing the voices of readers and feeling this weight of expectation of people sort of saying, oh, no, she wouldn't do that, or I don't like the fact that she did this. And it was quite paralyzing for a while. And in the end, I sat down with a friend of mine who's also a novelist, and she was pretty tough with me, and she just said, you cannot think about what other people think. You just have to write the book that you want to write and, you know, hope that they'll come along with you. But you can't think about what other people are going to think. And she was absolutely right, because as soon as I just went back to being in my bubble, as she put it, then it came a lot more easily.
It's rather fun that you got to do this.
Oh, do you know, it was the most fun because there's not a lot of characters who I really feel a kind of huge personal connection to, but I loved writing Louisa. I still love writing her. She was one of those rare things, you know, the character that just kind of drops fully formed into your lap, and I knew who she was from the start, and it means that I can kind of put her in all sorts of situations and know how she will react, and I'm sure you and a lot of your writer listeners will know that that really doesn't always happen. So yeah, I love writing her. I never get tired of it.
Well, one thing I love about your books is that I love how you managed, well, you sort of juxtapose the upper class and lower class as it's thought about in England. Now, in America, of course, we don't have that class thing. So, you know, but I lived in England for quite a few years. I lived in Sonning, you know, near Henley.
Uh-huh.
And so I was aware of the class difference and how in Lou's case, you know, she's a barmaid, and yet there's all this other class mixture that you do, and I think I love it. That's brilliant.
Oh, thank you. I mean, as a writer, it's you know, the thing that books really thrive on is tension, and what class does is introduce a whole nother layer of tension into people's relationships. And I think it's only when you leave the UK that you realized how locked into that structure we all are, especially outside London, funny enough. You know, it's kind of made explicit in the countryside by the kinds of houses that people live in.
It's people don't understand. I would know people who had made a fortune and they bought beautiful, uh-huh, you know, Georgian homes, and they did everything with the greatest taste, and they, you know, renovated them, but it didn't matter because always where they were born or what class they were born into was always the defining factor. Unlike in America,
that's
where
so
you can,
true,
you know, you can be dirt poor and become, uh-huh, a millionaire, and you can talk about being dirt poor and you're proud of being dirt poor. Whereas in England, it doesn't quite work that way. It's a matter of a combination of the accent, which you never, you know,
mm-hmm,
and it's fun. I like that that you take just ordinary, you know, a barmaid or a cleaning woman and make, mm-hmm, them the main figure in the story, because most people aren't upper class, and so I think it works very well for you.
Oh, thank you. I agree. I think that possibly, you know, what we would call the working classes get a bit of a raw deal in fiction, because in the UK, if people are including kind of those sorts of jobs and those sorts of scenarios, it usually means that someone's about to get murdered. People don't tend to be massively interested in the lives of people at the bottom. And I am interested because I've kind of done those jobs in the past, and I'm interested in kind of society as a whole and what happens if you are brought up in the belief that, you know, you can be anything and do anything, but in a society which is increasingly kind of structured so that you probably can't. And, you know, I like to sort of look at the way people keep themselves in those prisons as well. I mean, the thing that sort of interested me about Lou in this book was how we can think we learn these life lessons and you want to move on and lead a bigger life and take forward all the things that you've learned. But often we just slide back into old patterns of behavior, and it's really luck and judgment whether you manage to pull yourself back out again.
I think one of the hallmarks of your writing is that you do like to have that sort of tension, not just of classes, but tension of different types of people. I like that very much. I know that so many people in before you is a disturbing subject, what you wrote about.
Yeah.
And both from the point of view that the story is about a quadriplegic and it's the love story, and then, of course, the ending. But you've done a brilliant job of making it really a true love story. People are talking about how this is going to be a classic of this type of book. It's wonderful.
Thank you. I just found out today that one of the major retailers in the UK has named it one of their 100 classic reads of all time. So I'm kind of feeling a bit overwhelmed by that at the moment. But I think what I like is to take an issue that isn't black and white. And I think just because you're looking at an issue like, you know, quadriplegia or assisted suicide doesn't mean that it has to be dressed up in some kind of highfalutin moral language. I think that often if you just tell a simple story using straightforward language, you can actually cover some really complex issues. And the thing about that was it didn't come up with a conclusion. It didn't say, this is the right way, this is the wrong way, this is how you should do it. It just asked you to put yourself in other people's shoes.
Yes, and exactly. It let the reader make the decision within themselves. And I think that was really a very nice way to do it. You don't make that decision for the reader that this is good, this is bad.
Thank you. That's really what I intended.
Well, I think, you know, of course, it's very exciting for you after being on the best-selling list and then, of course, getting a movie deal. And
yes,
not just any movie deal. I mean, you got Emilia Clarke, right? Is from Game of Thrones,
yep.
And
Sam Claflin. Yeah. You'll know him from Hunger Games.
That's right.
And from a couple of other films like Love Rosie. He's just wonderful.
So it must have been exciting to you watch the filming, because you did.
I did.
You
I
wrote
was there
the screenplay,
every day,
right?
That's right, and it was a real steep learning curve, and I loved every minute. And I think, you know, as a writer, there's a kind of huge privilege in getting to see your people become real. The first day was sort of mind-blowing.
Well, that's what I, you know, it's wonderful to see your words on paper, but as a screenwriter myself, it's hearing somebody's speak your words that really, it's amazing. It's an amazing feeling. So,
and I think, you know, well, you'll know being a screenwriter, but being on set, you learn that some words work really well and some lines work really well and others you have to rewrite because they don't play as well off the page as they did once they're in the hands of the actors. And that was kind of part of the really interesting thing as well, learning that, you know, screenwriting, the screenplay does not exist by itself. It comes to life really with the actors and the action going on behind and the speed and the music and the color. And yeah, that was fascinating.
I am sure that the new book after you is going to be, well, you have already, I think, built in audience of 5 million people. So
I hope you're right.
Well, no, I'm sure, because anyone who has read Me Before You, I think that they are left with that thing, what happens to Lou? And I think your story has been, you know, you did a great job in bringing it forward, and I think it's going to be another bestseller. Okay, well, you know, I so enjoy talking to Jojo Moyes. So today, August 4th, is Jojo Moyes' birthday, and wishing her across the pond a very, very happy birthday. And I will be in contact with her later today about coming back to Joy on Paper so we can talk about everything that she's been up to. And when we talked, I just love the fact that she did get to write the screenplay for her movie, because not every novelist is able to do that, and not many actually are even given the chance. But she did a beautiful job. I think she did a fantastic job in taking her book to the film, because it is a special talent. Now, what I love about Jojo Moyes is that, you know, like many of us, she worked her way through college. She comes from a town in England called Maidstone. But she worked her way through college. She was a typist for a bank, typing up bank statements for blind people. She even worked as a minicab controller. And then she was working her way through college. And when she did, you know, she eventually got herself a job as a reporter. But, you know, her writing career was not easy. She wrote 3 manuscripts for novels that were all rejected. With one child and another baby on the way and a career as a journalist that didn't make all that much money, she was committed to trying one more time to see if she could write a novel. Her 4th book was rejected. Well, it almost was rejected. Anyway, what happened is after submitting the first 3 chapters, a publisher started to wake up. And they started, you know, reading these first few chapters. And next thing she knows, there was a bidding war. So the 4th book was picked up, and it was called Sheltering Rain, and it was published. And it was a good success. Not, you know, a multi-billion dollar book, but a good success. But again, she continued writing. And in 2012, she wrote the book that she's now famous for, Me Before You. Again, it was rejected, although she'd already had Sheltering Rain had already been published. And so she was known as a fine writer, but they rejected that book. Now, Me Before You is a very compelling book. As any of you who have seen the movie, it is about a quadriplegic. It is a love story. And I guess the first publisher thought, well, it's not going to sell. But Penguin picked it up. And within, I don't know, weeks of it being released, it sold 6 million copies. It is still being sold. It is a tremendous success for Penguin. And of course, later on, she did After You, which was the sequel to Me Before You. And then, of course, a wonderful thing, they didn't want to give up on her main character, whose name is Lou, is just so interesting. And this is what happens when you write and you find yourself a character that people become invested in. They wanted to know what happened to Lou after the first book and then the second book. And then people still wanted to know more about Lou. And the 3rd book, called Still Me, was released in 2018. And of course, in between there, the film was made in 2013 when they picked up Me Before You. Of course, as always in Hollywood, they generally want, I mean, they almost always, they have already script writers ready to jump in and adapt a book. But she really wanted to try, and they gave her the opportunity to do a script on her book. And she just knocked it out of the park. She wrote a really great script. And, of course, it went on to tremendous success. Really, when you look at it, it's incredible, the success of her films and her books. And now, of course, it's just exciting. But what I love about her is that she didn't give up. When she had the first 3 manuscripts of her books rejected, a lot of people would say, you know, that's a lot of rejection. 3 books in a row, everyone rejected. And some people might give up and say, well, I'm not going to go. I'm not going to try again. As a matter of fact, once, of course, her 4th book was picked up, once they published Me Before You and the film came out, my goodness, once the film came out, all 3 of those books later on became bestsellers. And she's been on the best-selling list so many times and for so many weeks. And it's really was exciting for me when I had the opportunity to talk to her. And I want to, again, wish her a very happy birthday. She has a lovely website you can go to. It's called jojomoyes.com, and you can go there and read more about her. She is doing a lot of really wonderful things with her money. One of them is that she has donated a lot of money to Quick Reads Initiative, which is an adult literacy program. And with this program, she has also written short stories and novellas for Quick Reads and for their collections. And again, she is very generous with her money, helping other authors and helping readers. So somebody who one can really, really admire, an author who didn't give up, who kept that love of writing, that joy on paper, and was determined that she was going to share that joy on paper. And I admire her so much, and I was very honored when she was my guest, and I'm looking forward to having her back here on Joy on Paper, because all of you out there who are writing, we all suffer the same thing. Sometimes you think, well, I don't know if I should go on. I don't know if I can make it. You don't know unless you try, so you have to keep trying. And again, sometimes, you know, for those of you who are indie authors, it doesn't mean you have to always be an indie author. If you write a great book that you self-publish and it does well, then you are right away have a better opportunity of finding an agent. And that's what you want to do. If you are an indie author, you want to try to find an agent only because it is easier. I'm going to tell you the truth. It is easier if you have an agent and if you have a publisher, because they, although it's not like the old days where they give you first class tours around the country, they still do help you promote your book. And promoting your book is one of the most difficult things to do. For all of you authors, I know that this has become, especially during the pandemic period here, it has become almost, I mean, it's like a horrible, horrible torture to get out there, because you could not attend conventions, you could not attend book events, you could not go out there and meet your fans. And one of the best ways to sell a book is actually by word of mouth. One person talking about your book is more valuable than any ad you can put on Facebook, because word of mouth still sells books. So I know it's been very difficult, but I want to, over the next few weeks, I've got a few more agents who are going to be coming on the program. And when I tell you about agents, I always tell you that you have to look for agents who are active, who are actually getting deals. And so after the commercials in a few minutes, I'm going to come back with an interview with an agent, John Cusick, who is actively seeking clients. He does take submissions, and so this is very important. There are nowadays, of course, the submission process is different than it was even 2 years ago. Everybody has this form that they have on their website. But after the commercials, I'm going to come back and with an interview with John Cusick, a very famous New York City, big time literary agent.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar. at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my next guest. One of the things that I'm always looking for are agents who are open and are ready to accept queries. So I'm so happy to welcome to the program today John Cusick, who is with Folio. Hi, John.
Hi, Patsy. How are you?
Oh, great. Well, it's so good to talk to you. You know, one of the things that really I enjoy so much about doing this program, I get to talk to so many best-selling authors, which is always just fantastic. And it just gives me a thrill. But one of the things I really enjoy is finding new writers who are just starting out. You know, I think you just have, like, one of the best jobs. You get paid to read.
It's true. I absolutely love being an agent. I got into the business sort of by accident. I knew I wanted to work in publishing when I got my start. And the first job I got happened to be an intern, sort of a personal assistant for a kids book agent. And I realized pretty quickly that this was one of the best jobs in the world. So I absolutely love it.
You know, when you find somebody and you can help them start their career, it must be very fulfilling for you.
It really is. You know, I think, you know, the book business is a business like any other, and it has its ups and downs and stresses and whatnot. But at the end of the day, you know, it's a great feeling to know that you are working with creative people and helping to sort of build their career and readership. And you know, I mean, one of my favorite things in the world to do is to be able to call one of my authors and say, oh, you know, we've got an offer on hand. We've got a publisher who's really interested, you know, and they know that their book is going to sell and that it's going to be out there in the world. I mean, that's a really wonderful moment.
Oh, it is. It's so exciting for them. And when you know, of course, it's a process. Of course, Folio is a major agency, and I know that they get thousands of queries. How many queries a day do you get yourself?
I get between 15 to 30 queries a day, and that's, you know, 7 days a week. So it's a pretty large number. And
it's a daunting task just to read them.
Yeah, it certainly is. The fact of the matter is there are just so many writers out there who want to be published, who want to make a career out of it. I think especially, you know, since the advent of books like Twilight and Harry Potter, you know, the kids' book world is something that's on a lot of writers' radar for the first time in the past few years. So, you know, it is an incredibly competitive atmosphere, certainly.
Oh, it is a big market. And sometimes people don't understand that they're not, just because they're for young people, they're not less brilliantly written.
Oh, absolutely,
and when they find an author, well, like when they found J.K. Rowling, that was it. You know, everything just was like magic after that.
It's absolutely true. I mean, the writing in YA or young adult versus the books for teens and middle grade, which is sort of that age range from about 8 or 9 up through about 12, you know, these books are at times incredibly complex and tackling very mature issues, very big real world issues. So it's certainly not a place where the writing is any less complicated or nuanced than, say, in the adult world.
Now, thinking of reading 200 queries, most people, when they write a query, I mean, they've worked pretty hard on that. They know what they're doing because, you know, I'm sure you can spot the ones who haven't put any work into it, and those get dumped immediately. But so many authors do spend a great deal of time. Can you tell when an author, just from the query letter, can you tell that they're talented?
I mean, you know, I would say when I'm reading a query, there's a couple of things that I'm looking for. Obviously, you know, is it a professionally written query? You know, is the writing right there in that query letter is sort of coherent and professional? Did they follow the submission guidelines? That's sort of the first thing that I'm going to notice. And the second thing I'm going to see is concept of the book that they are pitching me. And one of the realities of the kids' book market is oftentimes very concept-driven. Publishers only have so many slots on their list. So each book really has to earn its place on that list by being unique in some way. So I'm reading to see, okay, is the idea they're pitching me something that I think I sell based, you know, purely on that idea? Is it original? Does it sound compelling? Are there high stakes? You know, and that's the same holds true for a, you know, really beautiful literary coming of age or a romance or a sci-fi adventure. That rubric is still true no matter the genre. And then if the concept sounds like something that's really exciting and compelling, go on to the sample pages and see, okay, and is this person, you know, is their craft, is their line level writing polished enough? Is it something that I can really work with? So those are the sort of three things in that order that I'm reviewing when I look at a query. You know, the other part of my job is that when I take on a project after working on it with the author, you know, I'm sending it to publishers, sending it to editors that I think would be a great fit for this particular novel. And so I sort of am writing my own version of a query letter in that instance. You know, it's sort of it's a submission letter. It's a pitch and describing the author and the project and why, you know, I think that this is a perfect book for this editor and this imprint. So, you know, I definitely did my share of query letter writing when I was younger, and now it's sort of evolved into a different form of query letter writing, you know, at the editor level.
You have an amazing client list of really brilliant writers, and I know that each of them loves you to pieces. I'm sure of that. Now, where can people find you?
I would say, you know, if you're interested in submitting to me, go to Folio Junior. That's Folio, then JR.com, which is the website for the kids book department at Folio. And there are submission guidelines and sort of taste profiles for all the agents at Folio Junior, including myself. And you can click on my picture and see, and you know, you can see how to submit me there through that website.
Okay. Well, John, thank you so much for joining me today. I think you just do a wonderful job with your clients. It's an amazing list of writers. You're so famous in the business as being one of the, when I talk to people, because I would say, I want somebody who's really, you know, at the top doing young adult, and your name always comes up. I'm just so thrilled.
Thank you so much.
I'm so thrilled that I got to talk to you. So
you too.
Okay, thanks again, John. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Well, I love talking to John Cusack. And again, it is exactly what I've been telling you over the years, that if you are looking for an agent, you must look at Publishers Weekly. They have a section there called Deals. It's just recent deals, and every week, weekly deals, and you can find out what agents are active, what agents are actually getting book deals for their clients. And John Cusack will always be in there somewhere. He is an amazing, amazing person. He just got the worldwide rights to Samantha Suckland's book, Izzy Hawthorne, Destiny Awaits. Of course, it's a wonderful, wonderful project for Disney. And it is going to be, I know it's going to be a film. And it's one of these wonderful great children's books, but it was John Cusack who got the worldwide rights for it. And that's because he is active. He is really an active guy, a great guy. And this is how you find an agent. Do not buy, do not buy books of literary agents. It's an absolute waste of time to buy those books, because by the time the book is published, because there's always a lag period of at least 18 months to 2 years of a book being published, half of those people are probably in other jobs, or if they're still in the business, at other agencies. But John Cusack has been with Folio Literary Management for many, many years, and he's fantastic, and all of the people at Folio are fantastic. So if you're going to submit, just go to their website, and they have or form nowadays, of course, they always want this form filled in, which I hate this form. But anyway, that's what you have to do nowadays. And hopefully they will contact you if you have to make the pitch. Which reminds me, I have a little pitch idea from Barbara Powell, who is with the Irene Goodman Literary Agency. And she did this little pitch just to tell you how you write a query letter. So let's play that, and then I'll come back in a minute.
Okay. Well, Patsy, let me tell you a little trick I would say to your listeners as far as querying goes. The really little device that I use, it's easy to remember. When you do your query letter, you're going to talk about the hook, the book, and the cook. Now, the hook is going to be something straightforward, you know, great white shark terrorizes small New England town over 4th of July. So that's Jaws. And then the book section is going to be 4 or 5 lines of premise, not plot, premise of the book. And then the cook section is going to be a small bio about you. And that bio can say, you know, I'm a stay-at-home dad with 3 children, and I wrote this in my spare time. Or it can be, you know, I've been published at such and such a place, and I got a writing grant from such and such. The bio part doesn't really matter as far as I'm not looking. It's not your resume as far as how qualified you are to write. It's just a little something about why this book, why you, why now. So, again, your query letter should just simply be the hook, the book, and the cook. I think Sophie Littlefield is an author of mine who has the best query letter, and I asked her to put her query letter on her website for people to refer to. So SophieLittlefield.com, I believe, is her website, and it's just a very straightforward query, but you'll see everything broken down perfectly, what I was looking for. And that query, I mean, she sent me that query 10 years ago. She's been my client for 9 years plus. So, I mean, to me, that still stands the test of time as a very solidly written query.
Okay. Well, that's great advice from Barbara Powell, and she is with the Irene Goodman Literary Agency. And again, she is a very active agent, if John Cusack gets 200 queries a week, I think Barbara probably gets 400, because everybody wants Barbara really to represent them, because she's very active. And she was a comedian in her youth, and she's also very funny and very nice. And if you're looking for an agent, make sure that you check out both Irene Goodman and Folio Management, because they are active agents and they work very well with their clients. One of the things that you want with an agent, of course, is that you want somebody that you are simpatico with, and somebody who will work with you, and not just for one book. I like literary agents who look at an author as a long-term investment, that they are going to work with you not just for the one-off book, but to work with you for years and years to come. And you want an agent like that. You want an agent who will care about you. So that's what you have to do when you want to do get into a sort of a different, if you're an indie author, if you want to try something different and get an agent and get with a major publisher. But don't give up. If you are an indie author, I'm telling you right now, I am hearing about more and more indie authors who are making lots and lots and lots of money by simply learning the important thing that an indie author has to learn. And this is called marketing. If you are going to be an indie author and you have nobody, no publisher behind you, no agency behind you, then you are also going to have to become an expert marketer. And more and more, and this has some pitfalls to it. The one problem is that many authors, indie authors, are absolutely inundated with scams from people offering services, whether it's reviewing, press releases, all sorts of things, putting ads up for you. There are so many scams out there, and I want to warn you, and when Bill Larson, our legal eagle, was on the program last time, he reminded everybody that what you say in an email can be considered the same as a handshake, that it is a commitment. So never, ever say anything in an email. Never agree to anything. Never write. If somebody writes you, well, do you like this idea? And, you know, I want to go ahead and help promote you. And then you write back, oh, that's nice. I like that. Thank you. Not, yeah, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't make any commitment. Don't say yes. Don't say okay. Don't say all right. Don't do anything that commits you to working with somebody. Because the only thing that will protect you is a real contract. And I am hearing more and more about scams. And so I want you just to be careful out there and not get yourself involved in a real, real mess. Because as a writer, you put in so much of your heart and soul into your work. You are working so hard to share your vision with readers. And you do not want it all to be lost because of some silliness, because of some problems. I mean, I'm a perfect example of it. That's why I have Bill Larson come on the program. That's why I'm telling you, if you have a question, Bill Larson will give you a free consultation. All you have to do is call him up. He will advise you on making sure that your copyright is okay. And then if you have, particularly if you have a product within your book, if, for example, you have something that you think is going to be marketable, don't go out and mark, try to do that yourself. You need to have it handled properly with a trademark application. So Bill Larson of Larson & Larson is going to be on the program soon. We will talk about all of that, but I do want to warn you to make sure that you never do anything to lose your intellectual property. Because when you work hard to write a book, there are so many things involved. I know it's not easy. And I am so thrilled when I hear from you, all of you who are writing now, who never thought you were going to write. And then you just get to the point that you say, I want to try it. And you do. And when you start, of course, one of the things that you learn is that there is a lot to learn. I think one of the biggest factors is when you start writing, you just want to write from the heart, write from the soul. But you also want eventually to start understanding the process of writing. And writing is a craft. So I have here a literary gem that Jim Lamb has recorded for us. And it is about metaphors. And metaphors are very important in writing. And, you know, you might be writing and writing and writing and not realize, my goodness, I'm writing. I'm using metaphors. And I didn't even realize it. So let's listen to Jim Lamb's Metaphors.
Here's the headline. Add some spice to your writing with metaphor magic. Here's the short version. A metaphor is a figure of speech that describes an object or action in a way that isn't literally true, yet helps reveal its true nature. I'm Jim Lamb. Let's get started. Virginia Woolf once said, books are the mirrors of the soul. I've got a book here right in front of me. I'm looking at it. I can't see my soul. I can't even see my face. What did Virginia mean? That's something upon which we can reflect. Shakespeare, the bard, said, all the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances. Hey, wait a minute. I didn't get a script. Did you get a script? Where's my script? Mother Teresa put it this way. I'm a little pencil in the hand of a writing god who is sending a love letter to the world. Mother Teresa, a pencil? Books as mirrors? The world a stage? Welcome to the magical land of metaphors, where nothing is quite what it seems. Metaphors are everywhere. Even presidents use them. On November 21st, 1963, the day before he died, President John F. Kennedy dedicated the Aerospace Medical Health Center in San Antonio, Texas. Here's what he said. America has tossed its cap over the wall of space. Now, you and I both know that space is not a wall, but Kennedy used that metaphor to illustrate America's commitment to landing a man on the moon, a promise he'd made just a year before. By the way, we did make it to the moon 50 years ago, on July 21st, 1969. Promise made, promise kept. Some metaphors are elegant, like when Pablo Picasso said, art washes away from the soul the dust of everyday life. How about this beautiful remark from Cahill Gibran? All our words are but crumbs. that fall down from the feast of the mind. Here's one of the most famous metaphors of all time. I am the good shepherd, and I lay down my life for the sheep. Jesus said that. On the other hand, some metaphors are less than elegant. Like when Bob Dylan said, chaos is a friend of mine. Would you like chaos as a friend? Not me. Not even for one day, that's for sure. Metaphors can be funny. Like when Groucho Marx said, a hospital bed is a parked taxi with a meter running. That makes me laugh. Others can be warm and fuzzy. Metaphors can also be provocative. Advertising is a rattling of a stick inside a swill bucket. Yuck. George Orwell, author of the infamous 1984, wrote that disgusting little gem. He also wrote a little book called Animal Farm that's chock full of metaphors and symbolism, far too many to mention here. But metaphors are not just for the intelligentsia. Everyday guys and gals, ditch diggers, waitresses, and even tech service personnel use them. For example, have you ever been in an uncomfortable conversation where everybody's ignoring the elephant in the room? Or having to delay going outside because it's raining cats and dogs? Or after losing an argument, you continue to beat a dead horse. What did that feel like? Didn't you know the horse was dead? Couldn't you see it was deceased, departed, passed on, gave up the ghost, kicked a bucket, met its maker? Just let it rest in peace, okay? Remember, if you didn't like my metaphoric shtick, don't shoot the messenger. Then you'd be going down a slippery slope, and that would be a dead end, for sure. Let me leave you with this thought from Yogi Berra. When you come to a fork in the road, take it. I'm Jim Lamb, and you've just learned a little something-something about metaphors.
Okay, thank you, Jim Lamb. And he is so right. Metaphors really are fun to recognize when you're writing. And I want to just remind you that Jim is also a poet, and his first book of poetry is out, and out under the name of J.S. Lamb, and it is called Dark Fruit and Other Poems. It's a wonderful, wonderful book. As you all know, I believe in poetry for so many reasons. One, I find that reading poetry every day, just a little bit, is a calming factor. It just calms you down. And with a really great poet like J.S. Lamb, you go into another world and you see things and imagine things in your head that you never thought about. I mean, it is so much fun to read a really fine poet. And Jim's book is available on Amazon. It's called Dark Fruit and Other Poems. And the Kindle version is available, and the print version will be available soon. I hope you get that. It will help your writing. Learning to be really careful with words, to understand the value of each word, is so important for an author. This is something that happens to you. You're writing, and then you sit back after you've written a little bit and you look at it and you say, is every word the right word? Did I just get it right? Now, sometimes, and I've talked to authors from David Baldacci to Mary Higgins Clark, Nelson DeMille, dozens of New York Times bestselling authors who say that it has happened to them where sometimes they will take a paragraph in their book and they will write it not once or twice or three times. Some authors have written a paragraph 30 times until they got it just right, just the right word, just the right, to give just the right tone to their story. And this is learning to use words. So I highly recommend Jim's book. Again, it's called Dark Fruit, and I hope that you will get that. I also want to say today, before I'm going to play out the music in a minute of Kevin Edwards, because this is a song that really, I have been so upset by this whole race problem, which is really ridiculous. And I hope that people will just get over it, because I don't know, it's just getting to be too much for all of us. So I'm going to play Kevin Edwards' song in a minute. But first, I just want to say to everyone, be kind to each other. just stop all this nonsense and stop insulting people, stop using bad language. Just try to find that inner goodness, because there is goodness in you. And if you are in any way prejudiced, get over it. My goodness, this is 2022. We have a wonderful world out there. We can all be happy. And that's why I want to play today Kevin B. Edwards' very, very lovely song that really touches my heart. I listen to this song every day. It is one of my, on my morning 10 playlist that I listen to, because I want people to just be good and find some happiness. So let's play that song out, and I'll say thank you to Big Ed.
Growing in the town, sometimes I can't hardly face another.